Hi guys, Barry here. Two quick things before this episode of Worst Foot Forward starts. Firstly, the observant among you will have noticed that this isn't the Paul Flannery episode, as we said it would be at the end of last week's episode with Stuart Goldsmith. That is because we messed up, we recorded the wrong trailer, and we realised when we were editing this episode that we wanted to put this one out before Paul's one. It's no big deal, I'm sure you will cope. Paul's episode will be out next week, and in the meantime you can enjoy this one with the wonderful James Rowland. The second thing is the quality of the sound in this episode and in a couple of other upcoming episodes isn't as great as we would like it to be, and for that we apologise. And again, we've tried to make it sound as good as we possibly can. Most of them are pretty bearable. You'll cope with 45 minutes of slight crackles here and there. I'm sure you're troopers, the lot of you. But we've rectified that because basically we did a very technical thing called moving from Ben's flat to my flat. So because my flat is nice and small and full of soft furnishings and Ben lives in a castle. So there are a couple of episodes, James's one included, and some coming up that won't sound quite as nice as others. But hopefully you will forgive us for that and continue to enjoy the worst things in the world. Thank you all so much for listening. Enjoy this episode with James Rowland, and we'll speak to you soon. Right about now, actually.
I have a favourite World War II operation called Operation Cottage. Do you know about this?
I don't know Operation
Cottage. Is that where all the generals waited in the car park? Yeah. All the other generals.
Oh, come on now, Ben. Cottaging is in public toilets, as any homosexual would tell you.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
Or just, that's dogging. Get your sexual proclivities
right. I just thought like a nice, like, maybe winter retreat. All the generals would just like...
Oh, no, that's what Napoleon and Hitler did.
Just Napoleon and
just a little cottage, Operation Cottage. We're just going to chill out some more.
The odd couple bonded together by their shared inability to invade Russia correctly.
I would love to see Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau as Hitler and Napoleon. To Worst Foot Forward. This is the podcast that instead of saying forward march says about turn and run away, run away, run away, run away and hide. I am Ben Vanderveld. I am half of your hosts and I am joined by the other half of your host.
But I like that word, this half of...
Yeah.
That you're... Is half your host, right? Or is it half of your host? Is it like courts martial is what I want to know.
Oh, God, I don't know. What we've discovered straight away here is that I am terrible at pluralisation and grammar.
I think you find it's pluralisations, then.
This podcast is over.
I will walk if you get any more pedantic. I'm the other half of your hosts.
I think you're my next host.
Yes, I'm the other half of your hosts. That sounds like it's a disease.
It does.
Incubating.
Do you reckon the Holy Trinity have this issue?
Yes. So this week we are joined by, as ever, a guest to discuss one of the worst things in the world. And that guest is a writer and actor of many talents. His current day job is the same as mine. He's professionally prattling around as one of the Maze Masters at the Crystal Maze Live Experience in London. But he is also the creator and performer of the acclaimed, award-winning one-man show Teen Viking, named by no less an authority than Stuart Lee himself, the Emperor of Comedy, as his favourite theatre show of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival 2016. He will also shortly be heading to the Adelaide Festival as the star of another brilliant theatre show, Every Brilliant Thing. He is the brilliant James Rowland.
Cower mortals!
Kneel before his art!
Jesus Christ, that's an intro.
I just went in here. Did you not know all of this?
No, I mean, I did know that those things, but it's nice, it's nice.
Yeah, it's nice to be reminded of what you're doing.
Facebook, is it?
Facebook, a bit of Twitter.
Yeah.
And Payne's Plans website.
I am a relentless self-publicist, so...
But just before we started, James was telling us about how he doesn't have a smartphone, and to prove... Why? Tell us why you don't have a smartphone, James.
I don't have a smartphone because I was proving how indestructible my non-smartphone was, which I did quite a lot. I could throw it out of a first floor window down some stairs. I couldn't hit it with a steel topped cane, though, and grab it on the screen because it broke. So now I have a new phone.
That's a case of an experiment that went to my party.
It's the only way that story's ever going to end. It's like, look, you can do everything to it. It only finishes when you actually break it.
Hubris under laboratory conditions.
Hubris brought down once more. Hubris.
So every week we always ask our guests before we get into our topic, what is the thing you think you are the worst at in the world?
It's difficult. There are quite a lot of things that... the one that I settled on was sticking to, like, not drinking. That's what I thought would be nice in contrast with you.
Yes.
But, like, essentially just, I can't turn down a drink. I'm in a place with friends and they're like, do you want a beer? I'm like, no. And they're like, so you don't get it? I'm like, yeah, I do.
It's not even twisting your arm. It's not just like... holding your wrist.
Yeah, I really, like, I'll go like, oh, I'll have a week off booze and it will be 5 minutes before I'm already having a glass of wine with someone straight
I feel like the pillows have made this podcast already more confessional.
Yeah.
That's what you're looking
just
for.
Just, you know, listener, James is bedding down on top of the pillow
and rocking slowly back and forth.
And he is clutching the cup of tea that we offer. I know there's no alcohol in it, but well, refuse.
You've not been watching me all the time, have you?
So, going back, I mean, it's a very honest answer when you've given that. A lot of other people say, oh, I'm bad at catching things, or Ben's bad at riding a bike, but just not being able to turn down
drink. You're bad at riding a bike?
I'm bad at riding a bike to the point of not being able to.
How can you what?
For a long, long time, I would get on one side and then immediately fall off the other side, and I couldn't master the momentum.
Can we do some bike riding after this? You can't ride a bike.
You can't ride a bike.
Can you drive a car?
Yes. That's much easier.
I can't drive a car, but riding a bike's really easy.
No, but cars are mechanical, so they're much easier. Whereas, I mean, bikes are technically also mechanical, but they're mechanical that rely upon, not even technically, literally also mechanical.
Actually, you
might have got in your own head here.
Yeah, I know. But the
science behind bikes is bad.
No, it really is. I'll start going on it, and I'll be like, no, I don't like this at all. I'm like, you know when... you see a dog trying to go on an ice rink. Is the only other thing. A dog sort of will pop its paw at the ice and like, no, this
don't
is
like
not
it.
For me.
Don't like it.
That's how I feel about beginning riding a bike.
It's amazing.
Maybe before Twitter shut down Vine completely, we're going to have to create a little Vine you trying to ride a bike.
Yeah, I think.
The problem is
that's what the public are calling out for.
The nearest park to us, Waterloo Park, has no flat land at all. So it's just going
to
be me just going.
I think the problem is you're trying to get on bikes on 45 degree slopes then.
Oh, that is.
That might be it.
I think that's a real error.
We've identified the problem.
We have identified the problem. I'm just not a. I'm not a good practical man.
I like that we've shifted. Like, you feel on the spot, and James is the one who's confessed to alcoholism.
Yeah, essentially how this went.
That's just what an alcoholic would do. Clever diversionary tactic.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I drink my half bottle of vodka. Yeah. No, talk more about the bikes.
No, we need to do an intervention. I don't want to be at Cyclists Anonymous. Well, that'd be kind of like I compulsively ride bikes.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah, I can't stop.
I've got to wean you off and make you sit on tricycles. I wanted to ask James. We're just going to discuss this week the world's worst general, which isn't an obvious thing to pick. Because some people we brought in and they have an expertise in a certain area. And as far as I know, Tim, you haven't fought a war.
No, not for war. Not for war. I'm not going to lie. Your friend of mine, Paul Fennery, went for the one that I would have loved to have talked about, the world's worst board game. So.
Yes, coming soon to iTunes.
Fuck you, Paul. Are we allowed to swear? I didn't answer.
Yeah,
okay. Not swear like the mother country.
Fuck you, Paul Fennery.
Specifically, that is the only swearing you're allowed to do on this podcast.
Whatever word you say has to be followed by the word. It's Paul Flannery.
Yeah, exactly. Go suck a dick, Paul Flannery. I was really into military history when I was a kid.
Right.
And so I thought it would be quite a fun one before I actually thought about who I might choose.
There are a lot of really angry, like, bad general lists on the web, on the internet.
Yeah, and it's just not a pleasant thing, is it? I think that was the thing when I was a kid, the idea of actual, like, military history and fighting was so divorced from reality. Mm. But now I'm just like, no, that's dead people, isn't it? That's quite sad.
Yeah, but that's the problem. Whenever you learn any history, because I studied history at university, but I don't really do any of the military stuff, but every time I would read about it, like, even if it's a battle that's hundreds of years ago, and it's like Anglo-Saxon battles where it was the part of their everyday life to just go and kill other men. You sort of forget the ins and outs of that. Yeah. And, it wasn't like, at least in World War One or World War Two, you had the distance and the detachment of artillery. But for most of human history, warfare has been up close and personal and daggers in eyes and ripping out throats.
And after a while, the size of numbers of casualties becomes slightly, you can't really conceptualise it in some ways. But hey, fuck it, we're going to do a comedy podcast about
it. Mr. Barry McStay, who, in your opinion, in a crowded field,
is the
worst general in history?
I mean, seriously, guys, there were so many to choose from.
So many!
And I mean, I could have gone, I've gone slightly off-piste in terms of, I looked up some actual generals, relatively well-known ones, for example. There's a lot of very angry Americans who hate George B. McClellan, who was one of you. Was one of the leaders of the Union during the Civil War, in the American Civil War, particularly at the Battle of Antietam. Let it go, guys. It was 150 years ago.
Guys, you've got to let it go.
At the Battle of Antietam, he had an army. He had army reserves that were bigger than the combined forces that General Robert E. Lee was leading for the secessionists. But he wouldn't deploy them. Even as the Union were having localized successes, McClellan was still going, no, hold them back, I'm really worried. He basically couldn't count. He was always guilty of overestimating how many men the enemy had and underestimating his own strengths. So he just was convinced that they were outnumbered and wouldn't pursue them when they won the battle, essentially. Lee was retreating. He was like, no, don't run after him. You never know what's over that hill.
Yeah. Oh, I don't like it.
What's astonishing, when I looked at so much of this, there was one or two deeply inbred aristocratic British generals, but the overwhelming consensus is that most of the worst generals in history fought in the American Civil War.
Definitely.
I think that's partly because most of the world's compilers of lists of terrible generals are probably American.
But also, it gives the impression that it was just sort of like a comedy war.
With considering what the war was about,
And also, the good guys won in the end as well, and people are like, no, they didn't do it right.
The thing about McClellan is he ran for president against Lincoln in 1864, and because Lincoln wanted to end the war and try and negotiate peace, and McClellan was not for that. He wanted the war to continue. He wanted to really punish the South. He didn't want to abolish slavery. So he really had, because he was removed from command by Lincoln, he really had it in for him. I also want to mention General John Sedgwick, also a U.S. Civil War general, who's the guy who said they couldn't hit an elephant at this distance and then was shot a couple of minutes later.
Isn't the quote, they couldn't hit an elephant from this distance?
That's a very common online story. Apparently, there was a few minutes before him saying, I know, the best stories are never quite what they say.
So disappointing.
Well, you say that.
And it would have been nice if the artillery that shot him was just peanuts out of an elephant's trunk.
Yeah, it's funny the way he was wearing big elephant ears in the front, dressed in grey. And a few honourable mentions. Captain Hermanus Reinches, who had the dubious honour of leading a fleet of Dutch ships which were captured by a squadron of French cavalry. Yes, that's some boats being captured by some horsemen.
some seahorsemen?
No, actual horsemen. In 1795, the War of the First Coalition, which was sort of the monarchies of Europe against newly republicanized France, and the French captured some Dutch boats that were sort of trapped in the ice in an area called Den Helder. They captured 100 or so horsemen, took 14 ships, 850 guns, and 5,000 sailors.
Whoa!
Apparently they just put some cloths on the hooves of the horses, rode out, looked in the window, and the captain was like, yeah, fair enough, we can't really do anything about this.
They've got horses, lads.
Yes, but imagine being that dude, he goes back home to his family and said, honey, what happened? Were you defeated in some brilliant, canonized, smoke billowing sea battle? No, some horses rode out and captured us.
That's bad.
I also want to shout out the Swiss generals who have accidentally invaded Liechtenstein 3 times in the last 3 decades.
Excellent.
What, just act because the border's badly defended and they just wandered into
it? They've kind of just forgot Liechtenstein is there. In December 1985, the Swiss were firing some rockets and they managed to cause a forest fire in Liechtenstein with these rockets, and they had to pay compensation.
Why are the Swiss firing rockets?
I have a feeling that they're not actually neutral, just really shit at war, as this story is demonstrating. In 1992, some cadets set up an observation post in Triesenberg in Liechtenstein before some of the locals came out and said, actually, we're actually in the wrong country. Now to go back home. And in 2007, 171 soldiers took a wrong turn in the dark while on manoeuvres. They realised they were Liechtenstein, got about 2 kilometres to Liechtenstein, turned back. On that occasion, no one in Liechtenstein noticed, but the Swiss informed Liechtenstein as a matter of courtesy, just to say sorry. And a Liechtenstein spokesman, in the most understated way, said, oh, it's fine, it's not like they invaded us with attack helicopters. No big deal. Yeah. But my favourite terrible story and my favourite terrible general or leader is a man called Major George. I know he's not a general, he's a major, but it's not nitpick.
In charge, yeah, there's no way we're going to do other podcasts going the world's worst captain, the world's worst major, the world's worst
private. And as corporal. Yes, Major George Etherington, who was a leader of about 35 English soldiers, British soldiers, I should say, in a place called Fort Michilimackinac. It's Michilimackinac.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. It's in Michigan now. It was occupied by the French Canadians in the 1760s, was held by the British. Amazing. And they were dealing with the Indian tribes around the area, notably the Ojibwe. And the Ojibwe had some tension with the French, but they really didn't like the British. And so the Indians, the Native Americans, came up with what seemed like a very nice way of building bridges with their new neighbours in the fort, which was playing lacrosse outside the gates of the fort.
That's friendly.
Yeah, on the plains outside, the British would watch from the battlements, and then maybe a couple of them would edge outside and get a bit closer. And then eventually, one day, they held a massive game, which they said was for the king's birthday. A game for the king, yes, because Native Americans would obviously celebrate the birthday of the British king. And they had a game with about 500 players on the plane outside this fort.
That's the world's worst game of lacrosse.
I just imagine it was a lot of bludgeoning.
Absolutely carnage.
And the game was being watched by sort of big group of Native American women in their heavy blankets, even though it was June for some reason, they were wearing these blankets. And the British decided to come out and watch. They accept the invitation. Major Etherington was there, front row with the chiefs. And in recent days, he had ignored warnings from some of the residents of the fort, which included civilians as well as the soldiers, saying, oh, there's been a lot of Native Americans trading their furs for a lot of knives and tomahawks. Oh, right. They've been buying a lot of our tomahawks. There's been a run in the tomahawk market of late.
The Canadians were making tomahawks.
Yeah, apparently so. They were metallurgy. Yeah,
that's nice.
Yeah, it's very good.
Crunching.
But Etherington was like, no way. There's nothing's going to happen. No one would dare take on the might of 35 British soldiers.
That no one can think where this is going to go.
Oh yes.
No.
Oh, it's so good. In the midst of this game, the ball was hit over the fence into the fort.
Oh no.
And of course, both teams charged towards the open gates of the fort. As they reached the gate, the women who were sitting there in the blankets opened their blankets to reveal tomahawks and knives stitched to the inside, which were grabbed by all the players. And the lacrosse teams charged into the fort, massacring as many of the British, capturing Etherington and a few others, and basically doing exactly what you would have thought they would do, given half a chance.
Amazing.
I love that story. For the idea of Etherington going, no, they wouldn't bother attacking us.
Yeah.
There's 35 of us. I know there's 500 of them playing lacrosse, but we've got muskets. It's fine.
So can I just be clear, the people playing lacrosse were American Indians?
Yes, they were Ojibwe and the Sauk. Within 13 years, interesting enough, the British, the American Indians, and the French Canadians were all allied against the Americans in the American War Revolution. Mm-hmm. So 13 years later, they're all on the same side. But the 13 years beforehand, Etherington suffered. That must have been a really embarrassing moment.
It's essentially being the bouncer who lets a kid on another kid's shoulders into the club, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is. It's like, no, checks out, 6 foot.
Yeah, seems right.
I don't know, see, there's not going to be a problem here.
Also, it really sort of puts into perspective crowd trouble that we've seen in football. Like, that'd be something. If
someone gave West Ham fans tomahawks.
Oh, God. Yeah, just imagine. West Ham. It is winter, but there's a lot of blankets.
I don't think West Ham fans would use filthy foreign muck like tomahawks.
No, no, you're right. A good old-fashioned plastic chair.
Right, next up is our guest, James. Who, in your opinion, is the worst general ever?
Well, I'll talk you through my thought process. I thought to start with, I'd maybe go for Agamemnon, because everybody loves a bit of Greek mythology.
Yeah.
Because 10 years, it's a long time, lads, isn't it? It's a long time. But I thought...
For what is essentially a falling out over a girl.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing as well. And also just the fact that he's then is thrown into such sharp relief by Odysseus just sorting the whole lot out in the end. So, you know, should we just do this and it'll be fine?
No, it needed the 10 years of nothing beforehand before the horse idea could work.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think every 6 months Odysseus is going, I've got an idea with a horse.
It's like, no, I've got this covered, mate. We're going to keep the siege going.
Yeah, 6 months later, Agamemnon, I've got the horse.
Look, I think it's a great idea. I love where you're going with this.
No wrong answers.
I really like, but I think we're just going to stick with the classic siege, actually.
Is this what these Dutch guys were doing when the ships got captured by horses?
No, they're going to give us 10 years.
Yeah, come on, lads. We're fine. We're absolutely fine. So that was the first one. Then I thought I'd go for something slightly controversial, also in my wheelhouse in terms of the stuff that I've read about. And Napoleon.
Yeah.
Who started a strong start.
Yeah. Really good.
Really, really good.
Very much a campaign of two halves.
Yeah, exactly. But then just really, I mean, I think it's the thing of, I guess the thing with generals, it's the weird thing of, like, technology is entirely wrapped up in the way that you fight a war.
Mm.
And in that was sort of the halcyon era of the general.
Yeah.
Sort of just a bit of guns. But not good guns.
Yeah.
And so you're just like, so when you can do the maps of the battles, it really is, you're just like a big blue arrow. You're like, that's actually what it was like.
Yeah.
They just made them all stand in a rectangle and walk towards the other guy. They literally did that.
Some of them are on the left, and some of them are on the right.
Yeah, but it's just the thing. It's like his big tactic was just shoot loads of cannons at them and then send a big rectangle of men towards the enemy.
Yeah, Napoleon, there's a quote from Napoleon about something like, in a battle going, let them die, I spend 30,000 men a month. And that was the equivalent, because the big thing in war is World War One is like 10 or 15 times bigger than any other army size. But before that, Napoleon's armies were the vastest in history.
Yeah.
And you're right, he's not a great tactical genius. He's just going, I'll take casualties.
Yeah,
not an issue.
Lamp them right in. But in the end, I went for, and this is absolutely not going to be, I mean, it could be a controversial conversation if we're not careful, but Hitler. I've gone for Hitler, guys.
Yay! And that's a podcast in.
Essentially, it was Napoleon. I was like, there was the whole Russia thing that he really ballsed up, and that was sort of the beginning of the end. And I was like, yeah, but if you're going to talk about Russia, there's only one guy.
Because someone had made the mistake already.
Yeah, exactly. You're just like, it's happened.
Already?
It's happened. We've seen you're trying to conquer the whole of Europe, and what you do, don't go to Russia, mate.
There's a couple of issues that, like, firstly, you could argue Russia is not technically in Europe, so you don't need it.
Exactly, you don't even need it.
Also, was Adolf technically... Adolf? Was Hitler, not until the 20s.
You seem very friendly. Adolf here, Ben.
It's a good job nothing's being recorded.
I'm actually a time-travelling Nazi sympathiser. Reveal!
You need a twist, eh?
Was he technically the general? Was he the leader of the armed forces?
Well, he wasn't actually in charge of battle to battle. I don't think he ever took, except in the fall of Berlin, he started getting involved in where troops were going, to much to the dismay of everybody. But I think he was that was the thing about the scope of the war and the way it was being fought, is it became unnecessary for him to be in charge of, you know, the troop deployments, running specific guns. It was definitely
the overarching strategies.
Exactly. Like the cans. I mean, he wasn't just like, what? It's like on the phone, just going, guys, what? No, not Russia. No.
Like a project manager.
Yeah, exactly.
I decided we're going to invade Finland. Adolf, we've already had a conversation with the sub team. We're going to Russia.
Yeah, I said be creative. I didn't say go to Russia.
I just like the idea of Hitler running out of his book and just like, no,
go back. Should have flagged down a car so he could catch up with him.
Should have flagged down a panzer.
And that just reminded me that when Napoleon retreated from Russia, he sped out of there as fast as he can, and he reached a river crossing. I can't remember if it was the Danube, but he reached a river crossing, and there's a ferryman there, and he said, how many people have already retreated? And he said, you're the first one. Napoleon was the first guy to reach this river crossing. He just abandoned ship and got out of there as fast as he could.
My problem with Napoleon is that my entire conception
of
him...
you call him Adolf. You don't have any problems with Adolf.
I thought, what's Napoleon's first name?
Napoleon.
Fine, my problem with Bonaparte... I mean, the thing is, that just makes me sound like a housemaster in a private school. Bonaparte, on your feet.
Don't do that.
Don't scratch it.
Yes.
What's your problem with
Bonaparte? Yeah, but Bonaparte, when there is a fire alarm at school, he is the first one out of the classroom. My conception of him is heavily coloured by the actor in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. So I very much see him as a greedy, ice cream gobbling, water slide obsessive.
Yeah, it's
because that was what was missing from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure was Hitler.
Yeah, well, I think that's pretty much the only box that I tick, isn't it? Certainly, in terms of bad generals, it's the funny thing, and people be like, well, this is going well, isn't it? Well, this is going well. It's gone a lot better than I. Oh, it's ruined. Everything's it's amazing. Just like the hubris, isn't it? Hubris.
Yeah. Which I think, because Hitler was in World War One a good soldier. He was a brave soldier. Mm. But was it just that he bit off more than he could chew in World War Two? He lacked the tactical knowledge.
And also just by trying to take over the entire world, turn the entire world against him in an entirely understandable move from the rest of the world.
If he'd gone a bit slower.
Yeah, exactly.
If he kept up the pace of the 30s, where you do like one country every year or two.
Yeah, well, it's a really great history, but it's like imagined history of making history, the Stephen Fry book.
Yes, yeah.
Where he imagines a world where it wasn't Hitler, it was somebody else who was just a bit more intelligent about keeping things under wraps.
Do you think there's any credence to the idea that he, like, had syphilis or something that was sort of driving him slightly mad?
Getting
greedy?
I don't know anybody who's done quite, like, personally, I don't know anyone who's done anything quite as bad as him. But I do know people who I would describe as doing things which were similarly mental.
Yeah.
Like,
I like the idea of going into an SDI clinic and going, what's wrong with you? I think something's wrong with me. I recently firebombed a Jewish bakery.
Gonorrhea. Sure, I've got some sort of... It must be the clap, at least.
Yeah. I have a favourite World War II operation called Operation Cottage. Do you know about this?
I don't know Operation Cottage.
Is that where all the generals waited in the car park? Yeah. All the other generals.
Oh, come on now, Ben. Cottaging is in public toilets, as any homosexual would tell you.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
That's dogging. Get your sexual proclivities
right. I just thought like a nice like maybe winter retreat, or the generals would just like...
No, that's what Napoleon and Hitler did.
Just a little cottage, Operation Cottage. We're just going to chill out some more.
The odd couple bonded together by their shared inability to invade Russia correctly.
I would love to see Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau as Hitler and Napoleon.
That would be brilliant.
Operation Cottage took place in the Aleutian Islands, which is in Alaska. And it was in 1943 in August. And the Japanese had taken these islands, which is maybe as close as they got to taking any of America. This particular island called Kiska. And so a combined US and Canadian force decided to invade and take the land back. And they landed on opposite sides of the island. And they suffered over 309 casualties. The Japanese suffered zero casualties.
Whoa.
And the reason the Japanese suffered zero casualties is they had left the island about a week or 10 days beforehand.
Oh, man.
The Americans and the Canadians, because they landed on opposite sides of the islands, in quite heavy fog and difficult conditions, after a couple of days, encountered each other
and
started a firefight, which led to 28 Americans and 4 Canadians dying, Four people were killed by booby traps. A mine hit the prowler ship.
Like, there's no way that Princess Diana could be described as trying to remove booby traps from the field of battle. Like, it takes all of the dignity out of that landmine. It's got to be landmines.
Yeah. Well, a mine blew up the prow of a ship, which led to 71 dying, and 191 people went missing. So they're assumed either killed by more booby traps or by friendly fire or environmental reasons. So yeah, 309 casualties on an unoccupied enemy island. It's pretty hefty.
I mean, that's literally like turning up to play a football match against no opposition and still losing.
Yes,
which at the minute, AFC Sunderland could easily do. Never get bored of sticking that dig in. Okay, so James's suggestion is the world's most famous Nazi.
Hitler.
Adolf Hitler.
The name escaped you.
The name did escape me for a moment. Yeah, well, the name escaped to South America. It's like, what's your name? He's Pablo. It's Pablo. Really? Pablo Hitler. Pablo Hitler.
That's in the sitcom Napoleon and Hitler. Pablo Hitler is the abandoned child who comes back into his life in episode 3.
Walter Matthau on his knees is playing Napoleon. Shoes on his knees. Just the Argentinian villa.
With Scott Bio as Pablo.
The houseboy.
Yeah, Henry Winkler as Sergio Goebbels. Right, so I've got a few suggestions here. A couple of honourable mentions. We mentioned them already at the start to mention Zod. I mean, brilliantly played by Terence Stamp.
As butchest.
Oh, God, yeah. But the fact that he gets defeated by Superman doing some weird backward sunlight thing in his palace of despondency or loneliness, or the palace of
solitude.
I don't know, it's like, I've not watched Superman 2 for a while now, but it does seem that he falls for one of the oldest tricks in the book.
Yeah.
So, not great tactical nous.
It's the sort of the intergalactic super beings version of going into Russia, isn't it?
Going into a very, very cold place.
Yeah.
Which you shouldn't do. And he was, and like Zod, he was the first one out of there. Past that optic.
In that weird, like, rectangle thing fired off into space.
Yeah. If you can get trapped inside a geometrical shape, I'd love that if that's what they've done after the Nuremberg trials.
Like, it'll be a rhombus for you.
A really uncomfortable, in fact, no, it's going to be an irregular quadrilateral,
you can't really find your feet in it.
So, I've got a couple of honourable mentions. The first is quite a good Chinese general from, I think he's from, he's either 200 BCE or 200 CE, a guy called Cao Cao. C-A-O-C-A-O. That was if a horse could be Pope, a cow could be a Chinese general. And he ordered all of his troops to fetch grass constantly. It was very, very ineffective. He took part, he can't be the world's worst general because he was quite good a lot of the time, but he did lose the Battle of the Red Cliffs because an opposition spy broke into his camp, got to the general, convinced him that he should be listened to, and persuaded him to chain all of his boats together to stop his crew getting seasick.
Classic.
It's like the lacrosse game all over again.
Yeah.
Just imagine being that spy, though. You would feel great.
Yeah.
You would. The stakes are pretty high there.
But also, how good is he at persuading? Yeah. So talk me through again why chaining all of my boats together is a good idea.
And also,
Cow, I've got a great idea that the boat should go in the opposite direction at the same time. Oh. Why? Just flanking maneuver.
Stay with me on this, yeah.
So he gets an honourable mention. Statistically speaking, there's a couple that have to be spoken about. William Hicks, who Winston Churchill described as the worst army ever to march into war. Wow. His army was about 10,000 strong. It was the back end of the 19th century. They were fighting against the Mahdists in Sudan.
And there's one of these great, like, thousands of English people lose to 12 natives with a spear and a pineapple.
For some reason, the English didn't fancy this one, so instead the army was mostly made up of Egyptian prisoners and rebels who were marched to the front lines still wearing their shackles. And there was a huge amount deserted, a huge amount, and if a guy is wearing shackles and still manages to desert, you haven't got much discipline there, have you, General?
That's right.
And 95% of his armed forces were killed.
In an unsurprising
There's also
it's not exactly Leicester City winning the league.
Yes.
No, not at all. There's another imperial.
You're rooting for them, aren't you? Leicester City.
Oh, yeah, for the neutral.
I'm going to go for the guys in chains.
Yeah, it's one of the few circumstances in which a British imperial army is seen as the underdogs. Lucky underdogs. There was another British general called Elphinstone, who was described by the novelist George MacDonald Ross, I think, as the greatest military idiot of our era or any day.
He was the retreat from Kabul, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was. He was described as being fatally indecisive and would basically take the opinion of whoever last spoke to him, and I very much do that.
No, you don't, Ben.
You're right, I don't. And that's also why my suggestion is Adolf Hitler. But his survival rate was of 16,000 people in his forces. One survived.
Yeah.
But
that's bad, isn't it?
Yeah, and that was on a retreat. They were being harried by tribesmen as they were retreating from Kabul and Afghanistan. But it wasn't like a full-blown battle. He just was so wholly underprepared.
Did he die?
Oh, he died.
It was literally just one dude. Who was the dude?
I don't know, but I imagine he was related to the guy who managed to survive both Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But I'm going way, way back for mine. I'm going back to Roman times.
Yay!
And a chap called Publius Quinctilius Varus.
Oh, yes!
Yes.
Good. So, he's great.
Yeah, I mean, he really is not. Yeah. He had to go and fight some of the Teutonic tribes. And there was a call for help from a guy called Arminius, who was a Romanized barbarian, for want of a better word. And he said, come, help us, help us, help us. And Publius kind of goes, well, there is no way this is ever going to be an ambush. So we will set up our legions in that swamp there. Oh. At which point, Arminius went, surprise, it's an ambush, and kicked the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Now, it was so bad, and this is my favorite thing about it, that Emperor Augustus, in response to this, tore his clothes, grew his beard, and would be seen to wander around his mansions screaming, Publius Quintilius Varus, give me back my legions.
Yeah,
that's amazing. I'm literally the first two of that, though.
I presume you were in mourning for some reason.
James recently led an army into an ambush.
That's hence my life.
My favourite thing for why they're so shit, he did so badly. The legions he took in the battle were legions 17, 18, and 19. Yeah. They did so badly, those legions were retired.
Yeah.
It's like
like a footballer has had a tragedy.
Yeah, and their shirt gets retired.
Oh, they're so good. It's never,
That's because the eagles were lost, weren't they? The symbols of the legions.
Mm.
The three legions, the gold eagles they carry at the front. They were taken by the people who beat them, and so I think there were a couple of expeditions launched to try and retrieve them, actually.
Yeah, that's a funny thing, isn't it? In old the banner thing.
Yeah.
Just being like, I guess it's just a way of instilling belief into people who really have a shit job, isn't it?
Yeah, whereas now we do it with paintball. We'll get the banner.
Yeah, capture the flag.
And they believe it's a forest. There's a sort of a forest where the swamp is down. They believe the legions haunt that area or something.
Yes, they do. And it was, and also the, compared to our lacrosse friends who just got killed in a normal way, and Hitler, who shot himself and then got set on fire in a bunker.
That's what they want you to think. Yeah. Like Copacabana Beach.
I mean, Hitler is...
Napoleon, you've overcooked the steak again.
Tall and tall and lovely, the boy from Berlin.
But unlike Napoleon Hitler, hanging out in their beautiful silk frilly shirts and playing with their maracas. All of the legions, or a lot of them, were killed, beheaded, and cannibalised as well. And I feel like if you're defeated and then eaten as well.
Yeah. That's really completing a victory, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm going to shit you out, mate. Yeah.
That's how shit you were in battle. Yeah. You are now shit.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, like, I'd love that as a threat, like from a football crowd. It's like, instead of you waiting all the parties, we're going to eat you in the morning.
I've got a good British plastic chair to do it.
Yeah. What to carve with. I, again, have to try and decide which is the worst general in history. Is it either Major Etherington, who took part in the Fatal Lacrosse game? Is it the most iconically feared dictator of the 20th century? Or is it a long-dead Roman who had his legions erased from history? Tricky. I mean, as long-term listeners to this podcast and observers of my life will know, I'm Jewish. Don't even know that, guys. So it feels hard to turn down Hitler. Yeah.
But does that feel like you're giving him a prize by electing him the world's worst general? It's a weird catch-22 situation.
Oh, it is tricky.
Like, it seems like some sort of accolade.
I think, yeah, well,
like a Razzie.
Yeah, like a Razzie. Oh, you know Hitler would turn up.
Oh, yeah, he'd turn up. And
if you were awarded to Hitler, he is coming in the door right now.
Oh, my God. Or piggybacking on top of Napoleon. Yeah.
That's going straight to the drinks cabinet. Yeah.
Like, where's the notion up to you? Get out here. All you have is Russian vodka. Get out. That's like the famous joke of Hitler goes to see a fortune teller and he goes, I have to know when will I die? And the fortune teller says, well, Adolf, you will die on a Jewish holiday. And he says, well, which one? Will it be Passover? Will it be Rosh Hashanah? Will it be Hanukkah? No, Hitler, any day you day will be Jewish holiday. I mean, the thing is, I think Hitler was pretty bad. Controversial view there, my friends.
I don't think it's time for that.
Too soon,
mate.
His legacy is still being judged.
I think that whilst Hitler was a bad general, there are other things he was worse at.
Yeah.
Human being generally.
Yeah, we want to keep him in the back pocket for a later podcast.
Yeah,
you
know. Artist.
You mean we don't want to hit the Godwin's law with this podcast too early?
No, not at all. I want Godwin to be selected before Hitler.
Dinner party guest. A lot of things.
Yeah, but just because he's so fussy about his food. So
husband's terrible husband.
Oh, he's a vegetarian as well, so he'd be fussy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, farter. Yeah.
I reckon Uncle Joe Stalin's got some real hongers inside him.
Uncle Joe comes to visit in episode 5.
Yeah.
Played by Richard Griffin.
Along with
inexplicably very English.
I'm terribly sorry to do this. Would you mind awfully going to a gulag? Yeah, and he's in an odd couple with Genghis Khan. Hitler's out. He's a terrible bastard. But also, actually, I reckon there were worse generals underneath him, because Hitler was good in opposition, and he was good at propaganda, and he was good at getting in the government, but he was shit in there. And one of the reasons he was shit at government was because he would just delegate all the time, and I think he delegated to worse people. So you get a free pass, Adolf. So it's between my Roman general who got eaten by Germans or a bunch of people who saw Native Americans playing lacrosse and thought they're not a threat.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, I can empathise with their decision making, but also it's such a fucking ridiculous story.
I mean, who hasn't been distracted by the football on in the corner of the pub and had their bag nicked? That's essentially what happens.
Yeah, it's the sheer naivety. Do you know what?
I also love the moment where, like, probably the Native Americans just trying over and over to hit it hard enough into the fort. They're not very good at this, lads. I think we're going to beat them.
Do we know the result of the lacrosse game?
I think it was a walkover.
So I'm going to go for Major Etherington.
Yeah.
I think he is definitely the worst military commander
in
history. before we finish, just a little bit of terrible news from this week. And this is the news that in the United Kingdom, forged railway tickets are now appearing on the dark web. So that rail fares have got so astronomical that ticket touts are going onto the dark web, which is normally used for child sex trafficking and drug trafficking, just to give people a chance to get cheaper rail tickets.
It's a really boring Netflix series.
It's the follow-up to Knock.
Spiraling out of control.
They call me Trainspotter.
How can you get hold of this?
So go to www.darkweb.com. Just get on that.
That's amazing. So what, just forged rail tickets?
Yeah.
Oh, we've really let stuff go, haven't we?
we've really ballsed up the economy if that's happening.
That's the sign of the end of days, I think.
It really is. It's shit from two perspectives. One, because I want the dark web to be used for the really cool evil stuff. And also that Hitler and Napoleon, they were on the dark web all the time.
Yeah.
Sending each other recipes. /
Napoleon and Hitler.
We are definitely taking that name. So that is the bad news for now. So before we toddle off, James, if the listeners want to find you and
hunt you down.
I don't have a huge web presence. I am on Twitter,
right?
Occasionally, and I will put up if I'm doing a show, that'll go on Twitter. It's at JDS Roland.
Brilliant. And what's your address?
It is 47B.
Ben and I just made a game of lacrosse here in front of you.
47B.
Well, that would be my address.
If anyone is listening in Australia at this stage, then you can catch the Adelaide Festival.
Yeah, I'm doing a tour of every brilliant thing with Ben's Power. Adelaide, Brisbane, Auckland, lovely stuff.
Yeah, and it is a terrific, heartwarming play. Really should go see it.
Absolutely.
But for now, we are going to go and play lacrosse outside the scariest pub in Archway.
Yeah.
Until next time, this has been Worst Foot Forward Podcast. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm beginning to get a little bit of buyer's remorse after this episode. Should we have made Hitler the worst at something?
Yes.
I feel like we're the guy who missed the opportunity to shoot him during World War I. Hey, fuck it. We have plenty of other options.
Yeah, I think he was worse at other things than being a general.
Worse as a sitcom co-star.
Yes, he was. That's a call forward to a future episode.
Well, thank you very much, James, for being on the show. If you want to see James in action, he is appearing in the brilliant play, Every Brilliant Thing, at the Adelaide Festival from the 14th to the 18th of March. That is Adelaide, Australia. And
Adelaide Lincolnshire, which I think is a thing?
Yeah, sure, why not? And from the 21st to the 26th of March at the Auckland Arts Festival, go to painsplough.com to find out details if you are listening in Australia. Then, firstly, well done for finding out about us.
Yeah.
And secondly, well done in advance for going to see a brilliant actor in a brilliant play.
And also, if you're listening in Auckland, New Zealand,
Oh, God. Shit.
I mean, it's all right. I don't think we're going to get some really long-distance angry Kiwis coming for us, but I'm just covering all bases.
I'll do that again.
No, don't do that again.
Absolutely
not. We're not editing that out.
Fuck. Now my geographic inadequacies exposed yet again. All right, I apologise to the people in New Zealand. It's our first grovelling apology.
Only the North Island. You can give a shit about the South Island.
Yeah, fucking down in Christchurch.
Typical Irishman doesn't care about North-South divide.
As usual, please rate, comment, subscribe, all that usual stuff. Do you want to do this bit?
I'll do this bit. Please rate, comment, subscribe. If you are from Australasia, still try and give us a nice 5-star review. If you want to knock up a star for Barry's obvious racism, feel free. You can find us on @worstfoot on Twitter. We're also on Facebook, and we try and pop up links to various fun bits of research and things we've uncovered that we couldn't fit in the podcast. You can email us on worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to interact with us individually rather than as a duo, you can find me.
We have a price for anything, guys.
I literally know lower than $500. Yeah, you can find me on at Ben Van Der Velde.
And I'm at Baz Max Day. Our guest next week is Paul Flannery, otherwise known as at Pirate Moustache on Twitter. He is the creator and host of Nightmare Live, the brilliant 80s and 90s cult TV kid show, reimagined with comedians on stage. If you haven't seen it, it's brilliant. And we will be talking about the world's worst board game, which is a subject dear to all of our hearts.
Yes, it is. Also, incidentally, if you are not from the British Isles, do look up Nightmare on YouTube, because it will be baffling to you.
Yes.
Anyway, right, we will talk to you next week.